Hello and welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about comic book TV shows that did make it. You, of course, know my co-host, J.D. from Saskatoon.
Holy rusted metal, Batman!
No. And, you know, as always, we will start with the solicitations. It's just J.T. and me, just the two of us. You know, you can just call me the Knight, and J.T. is White Satin.
Oh, you...
Anyways,
you know, go ahead. Looking right at the top of the list here, Amreel Entertainment. Have you ever read Cavewoman?
With a title like that, how couldn't I?
Because I've always been tempted for years to read these comics, but when I look at the covers, I get the same compulsion to yell betrayal as when I look at a Grim Fairy Tales from Xenoscope.
Let me be honest with you. I don't like the art on the cover. The cover looks like it's like, you know, okay, the proportions are okay, the art is technically okay, but it reminds me of that area of DeviantArt where you have these people who are just not good at faces and not good at coloring.
I can get that.
The car is better more colored so than the woman.
True. But I mean just overall in terms of the comics, like the series, because, you know, I see it all the time when you go through like every month's previews and I'm just kind of like, I don't know.
Let's move on. We have Archie Comics.
Ooh. I finally picked up the first collection of Afterlife with Archie. That is surprisingly dark. I mean, the way they fold supernatural horror, the zombie apocalypse, and some very, very sexually explicit overtones with certain characters.
Well, those were always there.
Like the fact that Cheryl Blossom and her brother might actually have a Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch type of relationship. No. Yeah. Well, and then they had Ginger Lopez, who was like the Latina character they introduced a few years ago, is apparently in a lesbian relationship with Chuck's girlfriend, Nancy. But Nancy doesn't want to come out of the closet and tell Chuck that, you know, she doesn't like boys. And I'm just kind of like, really?
You know what? We have Life with Archie, but I'm just waiting for next month with World Without Archie.
Are they actually calling it that?
And then it'll be Reign of the Archies.
Oh, you're not calling it that.
Well, you almost thought although,
you would. Almost. Although I do... as much as I like Alex Ross's cover, like you look at the Alex Ross cover, it just looks hideous. Like,
It reminds me of those horrible dolls that just sort of give you nightmares.
Yeah, like Jughead's sitting there like he's like ready to like pull out a gun and shoot you. Archie has got this absolutely psychopathic look on their
like
face.
It's like they're looking down at you and you're in the trunk of a car and they're just about to pull you out to execute you on the side of the road.
Yeah, and Betty and Veronica are just, they've got like the Joker poison from the 89 Batman film Joker working on them.
But
he's been trying brand X.
So let's move on. Let's see here. We got some, you know, Aspen Comics doing what they can do. We got Boom Studios here again with Fanboys vs. Zombies Volume 5. I know JT's reading this.
Yeah, it didn't come in this week for some reason. There's actually like the regular, like just single issue comics came in. But a bunch of the trades and some other specially ordered stuff didn't, so... But no, but I have been reading this series. It's a celebration of everything fanboy mixed with the zombie apocalypse, which, considering what's going on this week, it starts at San Diego Comic-Con.
Which, the timing is impeccable, but let's move on. We got...
I got an Avengers comic here. I didn't know that Boom was doing Avengers. And by Avengers, folks, I mean John Steed and Emma Peel, not Captain America and Hulk. Because I ran into a friend of mine a while back, and he's like, my girlfriend's been getting me into this series called The Avengers. It's like, I didn't see Captain America anywhere. It was like, was it an English dude with a bowler hat and an umbrella? Yeah, it was really weird, but that's part of the fun.
Did you slap him hard?
I wanted to when he told me that his girlfriend was a fan of the fucking movie.
Ouch. Moving on.
With Sir August de Winter, this is only the beginning.
We got some Dark Horse comics here. We got Star Wars Lucas Draft hardcover.
Wow, that's out already.
Yep.
And Dark Horse, so is it Dark Horse or IDW? Yeah, we'll get to IDW in a minute. Then I'll mention you again. I read the first couple issues of this. As much as I love Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I'm on this particular title, I'm agreeing with Ben and throwing up my hands in defeat. It is way too fan fiction-y for me at this point.
Yes, brother, join us. It's bliss.
Let's see what else. Ooh, Gru versus Conan. I missed that. I'm gonna definitely have to get that one.
So at DC Comics, we have Batman 66 with an issue where they make a Dark Knight TV show.
And of course, Aunt Harriet thinks Batman and Robin are all like lewd and inappropriate for Dick Grayson, but yeah. You throw a little Christian Bale style, a little Nolan versus Batman into mix, and all of a sudden she's warm in the honey spot.
You know what? I think it's trying to like make a parody of something, but I think the message is so convoluted, I don't know what anymore.
But speaking of Batman, did you go to the store this week for Batman Day?
No, I had to exercise this week.
Ah. No, I went to Saskatoon. Batman was there with Batgirl. They were taking photos with the kids. Batman still won't accept hugs.
Was our favorite artist there?
No. If he was there, I don't think he was doing sketches. He might have just been in and out.
Well, he didn't have to be Adam West. But just so you can corner him and, you know, force him to get on the show.
Okay, for some reason, when you say force him to be on the show, the first image that goes through my head is the... Have you ever seen the movie The Suicide Kings?
No, but I imagine it has something to do with throwing him into a van.
More or less, it's these group of guys kidnap this aged crime boss played by Christopher Walken. They have him roped and duct taped to this high back chair, and slowly throughout the movie, he turns everything around on the kids that kidnapped him. And it's a really good show. It's just that's the first image. Just have Tom Grummett strapped down in a chair and have him wired up Clockwork Orange style.
Moving on, we got some Dynamite.
Yeah.
With Moriarty Lives, number 5 of Sherlock Holmes. Not sure how I feel about that. It's,
It's basically they do an original story, you know, if Sherlock Holmes could survive the fall from, survive his fall from the top of Reichenbach Falls, why couldn't Moriarty? And it goes from there.
Well, the thing is, the best story with Hanley Moriarty was the 6% Solution.
Okay, you want to run me a quick plot on it, because it's been years since I've read that.
No. It would take way too long, even a quick one. And it would spoil...
Right.
If I told you what it was about, it would spoil it for people who haven't read it, and you have to read it. It is required reading.
All right, then
Sherlock Holmes fans. The 6% Solution.
No, I read everything about like all the Sherlock Holmes stories when I was in junior high in high school. It's just been years since I looked at it, but I'll get to that. Let's see what else we got here. Fantagraphics, Gemstone. Gemstone's the one that did like the old Uncle Scrooge comics, right?
I don't think so. Let's okay. So we IDW here. We got Mike.
You've got Zilla.
Hellboy artist edition hardcover. We got...
Ooh, that Harlan Ellison's The City on the Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah. His version, which one of the most famous kerfluffles in Star Trek history. Yes.
We have some Transformers here as well.
Versus G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Although, for some reason...
They had the issue of Transformers where Hot Rod is about to cut his arm off this... To say screw you, time paradox.
Yeah, because one by one the members of the Lost Light are disappearing out of their respective shuttles because some shenanigans, and then he's basically pissed that Optimus made him and Megatron co-captains because Megatron decided, yeah, I've been a douche, and he became a good guy. No, they got the Transformers versus G.I. Joe. For some reason, and I'm sure it was completely a coincidence, I got the Rob Liefeld cover.
Which I quickly... Rob Liefeld sells comics.
I'm not laughing. I'm crying on the inside. Still doesn't know how to draw an anatomy properly.
There are feet on it.
The point being, I went and I got the Tom Scully cover, which is also the guy that does the interior art. I don't know, I just...
So, let's move on. We got,
moving on.
We got some, Walking Dead still going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
We got...
They got the, new Skull Kickers.
Mm-hmm. Marvel Comics, we have Amazing Spider-Man number 4, where, Dan Slott proves, yes, he can write worse. A lot worse.
I prefer to think of it as grave robbing. Or pickpocketing or something, because as much as I love J. Michael Straczynski, there have been some missteps in his work from Spider-Man in the past, Ezekiel being one of them.
Well, Ezekiel picked them dry bones. And here's the word of the Lord.
So we got Deadpool, Dracula's Gauntlet, which... if you follow the ongoing Deadpool comic, he is now married to this ancient vampire lady, and the Dracula's Gauntlet was basically a Marvel digital comic that entailed how they first met and fell in love.
Yes.
And I'm all for it, because, you know, even the pool needs some loving now and again.
He also has a thing with death.
Yeah, I think they broke up.
Video game implies otherwise.
True.
Anyways.
Ah, yes. Nolan North.
Nolan?
That's it.
Anyways.
We got... what else we got in Marvel here? Oh, there's the Mighty Avengers number 12, which is tying into the... at this point, it's kind of gone off the rails. Event known as Original Sin. Now, Original Sin, or a.k.a. Joe Quesada, wants to retcon the hell out of the Marvel Universe. And I don't think anybody can prove me wrong on that point. Although the Mighty Avengers tie-in story is... It works because they're the retcon or sort of retcon that they have in there is actually working in the terms of the story that they're telling in the present. So they flash back to where Luke Cage's dad ran with a crew called the Mighty Avengers back in the 70s when he was a cop. So it's basically a story of a 70s-era... grindhouse superhero team, which is kind of cool, except for the fact that they bring back a Blade in his Tomb of Dracula get up with like the high pimp collar leather jacket and the green goggles. And I mean, I love that, but I hate it at the same time.
I loved it when he was Spider fan
with Spider hero. Well, I mean, it's not like he had a lot of time to come up with a costume that day. It's just,
the greatest costumes ever.
Well, right up there with Paper Bag and Fantastic Four Pajamas Spider-Man.
I forgot the Bombastic Bag Man.
That's what I was talking about.
Well, moving on, we have... Marvel, you know what? We are through with the solicitations.
Yep.
Just glided right through. So, when we get back, we will have the topic of the show.
It's time for intermission, boys and girls.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Mike.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the Internet's number one and longest-running G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
It's Joe news, reviews, and interviews like you've never heard them before, delivered right to your MP3 player.
Our guests include Jason Marsden, Kevin Michael Richardson, and Matt Yang King from G.I. Joe Renegades, Larry Hama, Robert Adkins, and John Barber from IDW Publishing, and many more from around the online Joe community.
Yeah, it's guys talking about Joe. Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right, and we... Hey, again?
Come on, Chuck. We're just kidding, kinda.
Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right, and we... Okay, seriously, this is just getting ridiculous now.
It's What's on Joe Mind, every week on the GeekCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
I suppose I still can't say something about Transformers, can I?
Good grief.
No.
What about sports?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that's all right.
It's action. It's drama.
It's comedy. It's DeCian, the superhero webcomic. DeCian's got superhero antics and sexy girls. Read it now at DeCian.com. DASIEN.com.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back to talk about several of our favorite and infamous ventures into live television with our comic book heroes. You know what? I just have to bring it up. The 70s Spider-Man.
Cartoon or live action?
Because we're only going to talk about live action today.
Well, mentioned some cartoons, but
I love this because this does tie into a cartoon. The most un-Spider-Man looking, un-Peter Parker looking Peter Parker ever.
Nicholas Hammond. With his strainers for eyes and his
stripy shirt.
His web shooters on the outside, shooting rope, and battling not but gangsters and corrupt politicians, drug dealers and pimps. Because it was the 70s and it was New York City.
But, like I said, it's that stripy shirt, and it's the fact that, you know, John Semper was like, don't draw Peter Parker look like Peter Parker, draw him look like Nicholas Hammond. No one alive will get the joke, except for me. But if you'll talk about a joke, look at John Semper's career.
Yeah, I know. I was just thinking of, remember watching that show, like, back in high school when we got the satellite dish and the Sci-Fi Channel was still the Sci-Fi Channel. And they had, like, every day, Monday through Friday, they had the theme days. And one day was fantasy, and one day was sci-fi, and I think it was Wednesday or Thursday was superheroes. So they had reruns of the Adam West Batman, the Incredible Hulk TV series, and, of course, Mr. 1970s walking on his hands and feet in the most awkward way possible up the side of a building.
I have to bring it up, though, when you talk about that. The live-action Japanese Spider-Man.
Yes, Emissary from Hell, Spider-Man. Who, actually, and that's the thing, the Spider-Man TV series and, by and large, the tokusatsu universe therein, such as, like, the stuff that gave birth to Power Rangers and such, is actually a canon world in the greater Marvel cosmology, like in the multiverse.
But to back up a bit, the costume was a hell of a lot better in the Japanese version.
Oh, and yeah.
The actor they had in the costume was doing the comic book poses and looked freaking awesome.
Indeed.
And of course, he had a giant fucking robot.
That was a leopard.
Yes. And which gave birth to, like, what JT said, the Super Sentai formula, and great series like Zoo Ranger,
which became
something that was totally bastardized in the U.S.
As you might know, it's this little-known show, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Zoo Ranger is far better than Power Rangers.
Well, it's actually pronounced Zoo Ranger.
There's a Y there. Zoo Ranger, yeah. But it is,
well, it's,
it's something like Guardian Spirit Zoo Ranger, but it's actually a far better series to watch because you have number one is the story with the Green Ranger is far better, and the
heartbreaking,
and the creature's name, you know, it's not Dragonzord, it's Dragon Caesar, which is far more badass sounding in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, I don't disagree, but the fact that it's essentially Godzilla in samurai armor, more or less.
Yeah.
Just saying. It's,
yeah.
Right. Now, I'm just trying to find it. I'm looking on the Marvel website to find which.
And I think Mirai's story is far better than Tommy's story.
Although, to the writer's credit, they did still use the Green Candle, although not nearly as well.
No. Because Bri's story is about redemption and death. And not to mention is the thing is that dragon flute plays a whole lot more than just that one trumpet song.
Yeah. It's just everything is a little bit more epic in the original Japanese
little
continuity. I'm saying that to be kind. But, yeah, see, if you look at some of the live, we're in the 70s here, and again, one of the more infamous things, as Ben would say, and it's something that just, it always makes me laugh, is that wonderfully awful Doctor Strange pilot, yes, TV series. Like, and it's just, we talked about this before on the show, just the idea that the actual superhero union suit that they give Doctor Strange by the end of the movie is more closely related to the costuming of Nuclear Man from Superman 4, whereas the costume that Morgana Le Fay tries to tempt Strange with in the film actually looks like his superhero union suit. And it's just the fact I was telling Ben off air earlier, is like, well, it was the 70s, so he doesn't have like the slick back hair and the pencil thin mustache. No, he's got a Jufro and he's got an epic cookie duster going on, because it was the 70s and they wanted to stay current. I don't know. Do you have any sort of like or just epic dislike for this version of Doctor Strange?
I just think it's a weird like time capsule into the mindset of executives of how to adapt a comic book property.
Yeah. And this is all like the whole reason they're looking at Doctor Strange and the, you know, by and large, the two Red Brown Captain America TV films, which are slow. And I mean slow. Do you know what I mean,
oh,
Ben?
Yes.
I mean, sure, Captain America fought Saruman, I mean Christopher Lee, Sir Christopher Lee, in the second movie. But I think there's even less action in the second Captain America TV movie than there was in the first one. And the whole thing is Steve Rogers, he's honorably discharged Marine, just wants to take it easy, drive up and down the California coast, sketching people, living life, living off of a more robust stipend than what some soldiers get today, I would imagine. And did they give him like a straight up super soldier serum, or did they like do something with his blood? I forget.
I think they just
they gave him some sort of injection, I know that much. Yes. But there's that. But I mean, all this stuff with like even Spider-Man and the Hulk, this is all spinning out of the incredible success they had with the Hulk, not? Or did the Hulk come after Spider-Man and Captain America?
I think it came after.
Yeah. But and by far, one of the most successful live-action Marvel franchises. I mean, sure, the movies are doing great, but I don't even think they'd even have half as many people going to see those movies if they didn't have, like, fond memories of Lou Ferrigno in a freight wagon body paint.
Well, you forgot, you know, talking about Lou Ferrigno and the Hulk, you forgot about the ill-received Daredevil.
Oh, you mean the trial of the Incredible Hulk?
Where you have Daredevil as this guy wearing like a burglar outfit.
Yeah, he's basically wearing a onesie and played by the guy who played by Street Hawk himself from the much lamented and not on DVD, because the 80s was the decade of vehicle themed TV shows, at least in the first half. But yeah, the guy who played Street Hawk played Daredevil, and
there was also
a
Mighty Thor pilot as well, Thor was a frat boy.
The return, the return of the Incredible Hulk,
yes.
Was it Don Blake or Eric Masterson who they used for the, who's like this nerdy archaeology student who, basically, he's the gateway through which Thor enters the real world. They're going for that whole odd couple thing. Because up until this point, Well, I mean, that's not even saying just the odd couple thing they're going for, but yeah, they also went for that. Because you got to remember, folks, up until Batman 1989, superheroes were treated as jokes, also because of Batman, you know, stemming largely from the 60s live-action series. Oh, God. The one thing that pissed me off is, like, the death of the Incredible Hulk. I don't care which version of the Incredible Hulk it is. The TV show, the movie, whatever. The Hulk doesn't die by falling out of a plane.
Nope, he does not.
with this really weak-ass Elektra Black Widow chick character. Like, they didn't even give her a proper name. But when you think about weak superheroes in a live-action format on television, I can think of but one team. How about you, Ben?
Which team?
The Justice League.
You know what? I love the guy who plays Martian Manhunter. Just wasn't good as Martian Manhunter.
Yeah. Oh, God, that was so bad. Okay, first of all, was it Kyle Rayner? It was the Green Lantern, but he had the Kyle Rayner mask with the Guy Gardner suit.
It was the Guy Gardner attitude, though.
And he was, like, some sort of Tony Stark-like character, because he was, like, rich and had, like, some sort of a company. So I've seen this all on YouTube, because people have wisely put it there, you know, by which to show the world, this is how bad it can get, or worse. Was it Barry Allen was, like, almost practically from the Jersey Shore, couldn't keep a job, like he wasn't even a cop. Like
a Gildo?
Yeah, he was pretty much a Guido. Was it Ice was in there as, like, this mousy girl that worked at, a TV station in the weather department. Oddly enough, and I don't quite remember, it happened within a year or two of each other, but Miguel Ferrer, who he played the Weather Wizard, who was the villain of this pilot, he also voiced the Weather Wizard in the episode of Superman, the animated series,
where
Superman teamed up with the Flash. Yeah, Speed Demons.
But you also forgot that there was also another superhero mega live-action crossover before that.
Do tell.
I don't remember the particulars, but I remember the scene.
You're not going back to the 70s, are you?
I remember the scene where Adam West and Burt Ward stop the Batmobile, and Solomon Grundy is, like, disguised as a...
As a gas jockey. Oh, and Ben would be talking about the legend. Was that the legend or the roast of the superheroes? Which is basically a pair of live-action specials done in the 1970s, a few years after the Batman show, where I know the first one was a roast where they had Dick Van Dyke playing retired man, and it's a retirement dinner slash roast, and they've got, like, I can't remember the actor's name, because I know of the show, but I never watched it. They had the live-action Captain Marvel from the 70s. And they had, like, a Hawkman, Flash, Green Lantern, the Huntress. And there's also, like, I think some of the Batman villains showed up. There was Mordru, the Dread Mordru, and Solomon Grundy, who were trying to, like, upset the shenanigans.
Born on a Monday.
Christened on a Tuesday.
Yes. But, if we're bringing that up, we have to bring up another sad, sad chapter in live-action superhero-dom. Smallville.
And which one? There's stuff I like, and there's stuff I loathe. There's a whole lot of loathe.
Well, that's because there's a whole lot of loathe.
Ah, I see what you did there.
And the thing is...
Because Jeff Loeb was involved. Thank you. Now, I will say this. Once they went hardcore into Superman just randomly, everyone shows up in Smallville, sort of, they went straight on into the comic book continuity of Superman. The show suffered greatly. I mean, it wasn't genius before, but when it was just Clark Kent, growing up, learning how to use his powers
also,
and all that.
It was
that,
also
and...
Villains of the Week, Kryptonite Mutants, every week for like 2 fucking years. And not to mention the whole homoerotic Clark Lex will they, won't they thing that they were riding on. And they knew they were riding on and writing on for 3 fucking years. I mean, thing is this, the show has a tonal shift, but it's not a total shift for the better. It went from this weird homoerotic thing with Villain of the Week bullshit straight to Justice League bullshit, where you have the worst-looking Hawkman ever. You have Saul Tai as fucking Deathstroke the Terminator. What the shit is this bullshit? Doomsday shows
up. I would argue...
Doomsday shows up. Who is... Oh, Loeb. Okay.
I would argue that Michael Shanks' Hawkman is not nearly as bad as the one that showed up in Legend of the Superheroes.
Did you see those wings?
I said not nearly, not that it was better.
I'm just saying that there was a tonal shift from that went from like mid-series Buffy straight to wankery.
Wankery, you okay, say?
It went from mid-series Buffy to comic book Buffy.
Yeah, no, I get that. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, they're as bad as it got. There was still stuff I liked. I mean, again, I'm not saying this is great by any stretch, but it was the little nods that they put in there. Like when they had the cyborg episode, you know, he didn't have the armor on the outside, but when Clark uses X-ray vision on him, you saw
on the inside,
like the skull cap. Yeah, it's, you see all the right parts of the inside. How they executed Impulse and Aquaman, it was fun. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't the best way they could have done that, but I mean, Aquaman being kind of a surfer dude sort of thing, I mean, that makes sense.
Pause here because this segues into the Aquaman pilot that never saw the light of day.
Starring Green Arrow.
Or has it? Has someone here seen this pilot?
I've seen it.
Yes. So have I.
I got it off of iTunes for free because I caught it on the... When you go into the iTunes store, they'll sometimes have that free section. It was on in there one day as like a freebie download, and I growl, what the hell? But yeah, no. I mean, you really can't base it on anything other than the pilot. The pilot was very CW schlock, but there was something there that, you know, it might have worked. I mean, I've always been an Aquaman fan. Like when you get beyond the Super Friends version of Aquaman, is, you know, my ability to talk to fish is no use here, Wonder Woman.
I roll.
Well, yeah, I roll. But when you get beyond that and you get into like the whole kind of, you know, he's supposed to be the cursed king of Atlantis, that sort of thing. I think it would have been good. I mean, it had Ving Rhames in it, and that just adds about 10 cool points in my book. And then what did you think of the Aquaman pilot?
I think they overthought some parts of it. I think that's the biggest problem with these sorts of pilots is it has to start with an origin story. And it's like, no, don't start with an origin story. Start with the heroes already... Because the thing is this, Smallville was 10 seasons of an origin story. And that is why it failed. Now people are going to be like, what are you talking about? We've watched it through all the 10 seasons. It went through 10 seasons. That means it had to be good. No, it failed.
Well, it failed in the same respect of How I Met Your Mother failed. He's like, you can draw that story out for maybe 2 or 3 years at the most. Not until like the last half of the last season do you finally get your shit together. Now, you should mention that the Aquaman pilot, basically, it introduced Arthur Curry as this guy who does, like, lives in a small Florida town. He discovers his Atlantean heritage. And the fact that they were going to slowly build up the reveal of Atlantis, you know, being in the Bermuda Triangle, and the whole idea that Arthur is, it's very, like, the rebellion versus the empire sort of thing with Arthur versus the current rulers of Atlantis because they want to find him and kill him to cement their hold on the throne. You know, there was a story there that they could have built something with, and it could have been probably a pretty enjoyable kind of sci-fi fantasy thing going on there, but, you know, it didn't happen. And Justin Hartley, the actor who played Arthur in the pilot, you know, he had done the few episodes of Smallville, or no, he went on to do Green Arrow on Smallville. And this was after the pilot was passed on and they had casted... He was actually going to be Aquaman on Smallville before they cast... was it Alan Richson, who's playing Raphael in the new Michael Bay Ninja Turtles movie as well. So they went with the surfer dude Aquaman, and then they brought in Green Arrow, who's, you know... If you thought it was bad with Clark and Lex knowing each other in Smallville, then, you know, Green Arrow going to the same private school as Lex Luthor makes just about as much sense.
Yep.
Although I think even you might have to admit, Ben, Michael Rosenbaum was a damn good Lex Luthor.
Yes, he was, and he was also a pretty good Flash.
And he got to play both in one episode of Justice League Unlimited.
You know what the funny thing is he voiced Deadshot. And do you remember what he said his Deadshot voice was?
No, I don't.
It was a Kevin Spacey impersonation.
That was supposed to be Kevin Spacey?
Yeah.
I don't get it, but...
Okay, you don't get... Michael
well,
Rosenbaum
no, I remember. I remember
Kevin
very
Spacey
well.
Impersonation.
No, I get that,
you don't
but
get
I
get it because you don't see the joke.
I don't.
Do you get the joke?
Oh God, yes, I get it now.
Why did it take you so long?
Because I'm special like that.
Okay, what's the joke? Just so our listeners who are slower than JT will know.
No, I get that he's. Oh, just explain it to me, Ben. Because I'll just.
Kevin Spacey
myself.
Played Lex Luthor in Superman Returns.
Oh, God.
Where did your brain go?
Not there. My brain's just tired and broken down.
Okay, but that's why it's funny to me.
No, I get that now.
Anyways, there was the classic
you know what?
TV series with Mark Hamill's Trickster.
Yeah, and what's the actor's name that played the Nightshade? To the internet.
But while JT is looking up show notes, let's also talk about the classic Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
starring the Hoff.
Well, you just can't stop that feeling.
Because he's high on believing. Oh man, no, I remember that couple of year period in the mid 90s where like the Nick Fury TV film came out on Fox, and then the Doctor Who TV movie came out on Fox, and then we had Generation X, which has been disavowed by some of the people that worked on it on Fox. But no, like say what
you low.
Yeah, the say what you will about the Hoff's acting.
He has acting?
He has some talents.
Well,
it's
he certainly knows how to ask for a cheeseburger.
Oh, yeah. But no, I mean, I liked that TV movie because it was pure Steranko-era Nick Fury mixed with a dash of the 90s on there, Lisa Rinna in her prime as the Countess, Gary Chalk, Optimus Primal himself, as Timothy Aloysius Dum Dum Dugan.
I think the Dum Dum that was in the
Captain America
was
movie
far better.
Oh, Neil McDonough. No, he actually. I read an interview online with him prior to that came out. So he purposely went in for a muscle building. Like diet sort of thing, so he could pack on the weight and the muscle, so he could look thick like dum dum looks. And he said as soon as he put down the phone after getting a word from his agent that he got the role, he didn't shave.
Well, he got the mutton chops
for going. He got the mutton chops going. He went for the praise, getting the Pringles cookie duster going on, and he sold that role like the Neil
One
McDonough
day I'll be the guy with the stick.
Yeah, you know, Fritz, and he says it with that slight smile on his face, but his eyes are just saying F you. Like, he is just ready to smack a bitch. And really, Dum Dum, not completely, I will say, but his role as Dum Dum Dugan has redeemed himself somewhat in my eyes after his abysmal performance as this guy purported to be M. Bison in that movie that wasn't actually based on Street Fighter, but claimed to be.
He wasn't Raul Julia.
No, he wasn't, but he was supposedly playing M. Bison in Legend of Chun-Li.
That's not a movie.
No, it's a fan film that got leaked into theaters by accident.
No, that never happened.
Oh, it happened, Ben.
I don't know how these
and one of the guys
you're talking about.
And one of the guys from the Black Eyed Peas was Vega. And Michael Clark Duncan was Balrog. And Liu Kang so from Mortal Kombat was Gen.
Was...
No, not Will I Am.
That would have been awesome.
The other guy. That might have actually made it better.
Because he was already a mutant.
Well, he could be in two places at once. But no, the Neil McDonough was great as Dun. Pardon me. Where the heck is it? I'm just looking up the Flash here. I forgot. We had Mark Hamill as the Trickster. Mm-hmm. Captain Cold was this guy, Michael Champion. Don't recognize that actor's name. Jason Bernard was a black actor. He played Dr. Desmond Powell, was the Nightshade. Mm-hmm. And I'm just looking. Richard Berge, if you ever seen the TV show Sentinel. Yes. About the cop with the super senses, he was the deadly Nightshade, who was like the murderous noon version of the Nightshade that came out.
Seeing what others
and do. That's it. David, I could remember it. David Cassidy was the Mirror Master. I read a while ago, I remember reading an interview with Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo. Talking about what they're working on now, and they're also got to talking about the Flash 90 series, and the interview asked them if there had been a second season, would we have seen the Rogues? And they're like, not only would you have seen the return of the Trickster, Mirror Master, and Captain Cold, they also wanted to do Captain Boomerang and the Weather Wizard.
And have them all in a bar one episode.
Exactly. And the Captain Cold would have an ulcer. And the Flash would have said something like, James, when you're done your drink, turn yourself in. Cut me again, Flash.
You know what they should have had?
They should have got those actors to voice those characters in that episode of Justice League.
I know, but they should have also had some of the other Flash villains that... I always liked Heatwave.
Heatwave with the Pyromaniac, yeah. Heatwave would have been good.
Well, I liked Heatwave when he turned good and teamed up with the Golden Guardian.
Yeah. You know what? They could have done Gorilla Grodd. It would have looked cheesier than all hell, but they could have pulled it off. I mean, even in the 90s. I mean, they did Mighty Joe Young, and that was part animatronics and part a real gorilla and some guy in a suit. I mean, they could have done it. Yeah. Stop eating my sesame seed cake! Oh, Tim Curry. No, but, I mean, yeah, the Flash series is great, and I mean...
I think the Flash series is, like, the epitome of what you can do with a television budget.
Yeah, that and the fact that they pretty much stole Danny Elfman to work on the music. And I'm not knocking Danny Elfman when I say this, but, I mean, just because you change the tempo of the music doesn't mean you get to use the Batman score over and over again. But that's basically what they did with the Flash, the theme music and a lot of the transition music was cues from the 89 Batman orchestrated
music. Elfman also did the Army of Darkness March song.
True. And I didn't know this. I'm just looking at the wiki right now. Howard Chaykin wrote several episodes of this series. That's actually awesome. And even Danny Bilson and Paul DeMeo went on to write... the part of the run of Flash Fastest Man Alive, like the year-long series where Bart Allen was the Flash, you know, prior to Barry Allen coming back and all that.
And being shown to be no good compared to his grandfather and Jeff Johns.
Then he was resurrected in the future.
Phone call saying, hey, Mark, I killed your guy.
Yeah. I mean, talk about the villains, like Sam Scudder, David Cassidy was the Mirror Master, you know, his... A smart scientist who, it wasn't so much mirrors, but, you know, mirrors and hologram technology. The Captain Cold was basically this albino with a nuclear-powered ice gun, which basically looked like he ripped off part of the Ghostbusters technology to build that, which was kind of fun. They had,
another series that caused some ripples.
It's just
that,
awesome, that caused some what I'm ripples saying.
In the Fox network. And in Marvel Entertainment, Mutant X.
That wasn't even Fox. That was syndicated.
There was a lawsuit involved, people.
Yeah, because they had the Marvel comic Mutant X, and then these guys who they had the rights to the name Mutant X and the concept, like, the word mutants. It wasn't necessarily the whole concept. And basically, mutants were created in a privately funded genetics laboratory by Lex Luthor. I mean, I think Ben and I can both agree that John Shea is, like, one of, if not the best, live-action Lex Luthors. Plus, he had hair. You know. But, yeah, he plays this guy, Adam, who...
He's Xavier.
They were what he's basically the Xavier, but, I mean, the whole setup was that he was working in this, like, government government-run lab.
Where they're trying to recruit mutants and... Well,
yeah, but I mean, he created all the...
I know, but it's a little shady once you start doing that. You have a guy who creates a school to teach mutants and recruit mutants, and it's like, it looks like, and they're based out of what looks like a really nice New England mansion, and it's like, really? Really? You didn't even finish filing the serial numbers off with this, guys?
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea that they have this government lab where they're doing genetic therapies to cure these kids of, like, disease, and the technology they use to, like, rewrite their DNA randomly gave them superpowers. Like, I don't even remember, there was this one really hot brunette who, she had this pheromone control power, and she also had scorpion stingers that would pop out of her wrists, like Wolverine style.
Combination of purple man and Wolverine.
Yeah. And it's
purple
just...
Purple rain.
Yeah. And I mean, then the second season, they brought in the concept of secondary mutations, which they were that, I could see the lawsuit being based on, because that was something they were ripping off directly from the X-Men comics at the time, where you wouldn't... Some mutants either got...
More mutants?
A secondary...
More mutant-y or got...
They got another power, or they had another aspect of their powers all of a sudden just... It's called plot convenience,
yeah,
people.
Yeah, this is where Emma Stone went from Jean Grey Light to the Red Mage of the X-Men universe.
Basically. And then, although, I mean, not all the secondary mutations in the comics really made sense, but some resulted in some cool visual styles, like how Beast went from being the, you know, Monkey Man to being the Uncowardly Lion.
Yes.
And I thought that was a really cool upgrade.
He went from the Missing Link to the Cat.
Yeah. But, I mean, you get back to Mutant X, the secondary mutations just basically, because in the first season was actually fairly decent, because the whole idea that there's this kind of secret underground war, you know, humans versus bigoted humanity, blah, blah. And then in the second season, I don't think it was a change in showrunners, but they had a change in the writing staff. And they started to make the more of an action-adventure-y type of tone. So there's Brennan, played by Victor Webster. He's on the show Continuum. This is a great sci-fi travel show. I say check it out. He had electric powers where, you know, he could generate electricity to unlock doors or, like, tag people. Now he has this thing where he can, like, put blast at the floor and send himself flying. Or there was Jesse, who... He was basically the Kitty Pryde of the show, that, you know, he could phase through walls, and then he gained the ability to control the density of himself to give himself, like, super strength or to, like, phase other people into the ground. There was what Emma, who's this was the best move they did. Emma was an empath, so she couldn't read minds, but she could kind of read emotions. And in the second series, they gave her a psychic blast because they wanted to give her an offensive power for some reason.
Yeah, that was... Well, you know what? Like I said, the lawsuit came and no one was surprised. But you know what? If we're touching this, we have to briefly touch the Nightman.
Oh, God help me. I loved that show.
I only liked the first season.
Okay, I'll recant. I love the first season of that show. Because the second season, and or the most I'll say of it, this is the second season. Kim Coates, who we all know as Tig from Sons of Anarchy, plays a Lex Luthor-like billionaire who develops some sort of virtual reality technology because virtual reality was all the rage in the 90s, kills Nightman's dad, and the end. Because I don't think they ever really resolved
that.
They
did not, but it's... The whole thing. The whole thing.
The first season was awesome.
Became shite really easily. and which showed how finicky it was.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the first season. I mean, they really played up the whole like Johnny Domino gets struck by lightning and receives the psychic ability to only hear evil thoughts, which I'm sure the writers thought that would make things more interesting and challenging for the villain. But if you're gonna have him read minds, just have him read minds, and maybe it's easier for him to tune into the tune of evil.
But
On station KILL.
But
how he gets his suit and all that.
1080 for smooth jazz, evil listening. But let's also talk about some other couple series here, because I think we touched.
How about a good one?
We talked about The Flash.
A good pilot from Fox. You know of what I speak then.
No, which good pilot?
The Mantis.
The first Mantis pilot was brilliant, because it had all these touches of things to it that made it feel almost alien. Chic, not over-explained. So like here,
very Pulp Fiction.
Here's this guy. He's a paraplegic doctor, but he goes out at night as the Mantis, and he has this flying car. Nothing's over-explained. But then they ran the series proper, and every single thing about him they explained. And then all of a sudden, all the mysticism and mystery and coolness leached itself out of it.
Well, the great thing, I wouldn't say alien, but I mean, like I said, it's got this, the original pilot had these Pulp Fiction overtones. I mean, he's a paraplegic billionaire doctor who's got a secret lab the size of the helicarrier underneath the ocean off the coast of this California city that he's in. But when he goes around, he's got, what do we call that, an endos or exoskeleton, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he creates this exoskeleton suit that allows him to walk. And he doesn't, unlike the show where he just goes walking around in this suit, he goes walking around in the suit while dressed in a damn fine suit.
Yeah, it's almost Armani.
Yeah, pretty darn good. And I mean, he walks around like a guy, it's basically like a Pulp Fiction superhero. He walks around this suit fighting crime, trying to, cure society's
ills.
Sort
of like the feel of the current Moon Knight series, where you have Moon Knight walking around in just a white suit.
Yeah, just straight pimping in a suit like that. And I mean, pimping's not that far off. I mean, his flying car transforms into a pimpmobile caddy, more or less.
Well, the thing is that I liked was the original pilot has him with helper characters that were interesting and cool, and then all of a sudden when they made the series proper, they're like, they gave him the street tough skater guy to be one of his helpers. It's like, no,
he was a bike messenger. It's Grady from Tremors 2. And they had I can't remember the English. I'm gonna have to look it up here quick. The English actor, he had the English friend sidekick who was also his like tech support.
But the big thing was he was his own tech support too, and I think
the one thing that I loved about Mantis, like we said, by and large, Roger Reese was his best friend's tech support. John Stonebreak, and then there's Carl Lumley as Dr. Miles Hawkins.
It worked, because the thing is, many years later, Stan Lee took the exact same concept and made him a Latino boy, and it sucked.
What?
Oh, you didn't know about this?
That's usually what I mean when I say what like that, Ben. Of what do you speak?
Stan Lee presents the Condor.
What?
The Condor was this anime movie that Stan Lee, quote, made about this Hispanic guy that's a professional skateboarder, was injured one day to where he becomes a paraplegic, and he uses technology to make an exosuit that lets him walk again, but also gives him superpowers.
Really? Yes. You're serious? Yeah. Wow!
It was an animated movie and everything, and it had like Scott McNeil was in it.
Okay. Wow.
Here we go. I have a trailer for you. But before I play this trailer and blow JT's mind, I think we have reached the Oedipus of this episode. We might do a part two later on. But this show's Ben.
And JT from Saskatoon.
And we're saying goodnight.
So long.